Chasedown on Leverage the Chat. I'm Justin Rowan with my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, everything is solved. The Cavs are winning basketball games again.
I'm not sure everything is solved, Justin, but...
Hey, listen, they have beat some juggernauts. They have four straight games, second longest winning streak in the NBA. How can you tell me things aren't fine?
I guess you're right. everything's good now. In a lot of ways, like, it's been an encouraging week, and in a lot of ways, it's like all the same problems are still there. I don't know, like, how are you feeling about this team over the course of this four-game win streak?
I think you summed it up pretty well, that a lot of the issues are still there. They're still dead last in defensive efficiency. Those concerns are very much real.
But they're not as dead last.
It's true. But I think there's a lot of signs for encouragement with this team. I think they are playing better team basketball. Dwayne Wade has looked really good since he's gone to the bench. LeBron is still pretty damn good at basketball. Kevin Love's been good. Jay Crowder showing at least more effort on defense. I think the offense is a bit of a roller coaster ride still. But overall, the team is starting to show more signs of being a team. And when you factor that with all the injuries they've had and the fact that they are going to be getting guys back, and Isaiah Thomas is now participating in practice, I think things are going in the right direction with this team. Obviously, there's going to be future lulls, and things are going to fall apart to some extent when they face better competition. But it's hard not to be encouraged right now with how they're playing.
Yeah, I mean, so I think some of the stuff is looking a lot better. I think Tyronn Lue has at least found lineups that are, like, working.
Right.
And he's going to them fairly regularly, which is encouraging to see. The defense seems to, like, not be messing up as much.
Yeah, like, it's not great, but it's not overt, like, just...
Yeah.
Historically, hilariously bad defense.
Yeah, and then you look at the fact that the bench is playing well without LeBron on the floor. I think that matters a lot long term, even if they're playing some inferior competition. Like, you kind of start to see the bones of a team that's not bad at basketball in this four-game streak. But I will say something that... friend of the show, Jeff Nomina, said to me that I think that has really stuck with me. He's like the Cavs just used to, like, blow teams out of the water.
When? Year one, the second half of year one, they did that.
I'm saying there are games where they blow teams out of the water, where they look overwhelmingly good. I'm not sure
only...
has looked overwhelming at any point in the season.
No, well, I guess their one convincing win was the second game of the season where they won by like 20 against Milwaukee in Milwaukee. Like, I felt like that was an impressive win, even though Milwaukee still got off to a rough start this season. But I don't know. Like, I think it's tough to really get too down on this team. Like, I'm naturally, when things are going well, I'm looking at, okay, well, how sustainable is this? Why are things going well? Is this legit? And when things are going poorly, I tend to think, okay, things are going to get a little bit better. Never too high, never too low. And when you're dealing with this team, like, yes, they haven't had a lot of convincing wins, but they're also missing two of their four most important players. Like, Tristan Thompson and Isaiah Thomas, it's very important for the team that those guys get back and start playing like themselves. Kevin Love, even though he's kind of been a tire fire on defense, I think we're kind of underappreciating just how good he's been offensively this season. He is having his most efficient season of his career in terms of true shooting percentage. It's at 60%, just over 18 points per game, over 10 rebounds. He's been inconsistent, and I do understand that when this team has had some of its ugliest losses, he's been a non-factor in those. But overall, his impact this season has been very good, and I think it's just a matter of these guys figuring out how to play with each other.
Yeah, I think both of us are feeling fairly good about this team right now, compared to how we felt like 2 weeks ago. I think that when you're looking at things that are sustainable, you know Wade, is going to probably stay pretty solid at where he's at. Like, what he's doing isn't unsustainable. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think he's capable of playing better.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that LeBron's play is fairly sustainable. It's kind of what he does. I think it's fair to say Love's play is sustainable. It's what he does. Korver, same. And then you look at the guys, the candidates for regression, you're probably mostly looking at Jeff Green. But Jeff Green's, his three-point shot has been better than it really has any right to be. He's only shooting 33%. He's not, hitting a ton of threes.
Yeah, so, that's normal. I don't think that would be a career high mark for him, right?
I don't think so. And if it is, I feel like it's probably close to his career average. I'm looking now. If you're just looking at Green, his strong play has been a matter of style as opposed to unreasonable production. Like, he's always been able to dunk. He's always been able to make layups.
He's in that condensed line.
He's getting to the line at a really strong rate. His career high in three-point shooting, by the way, was a outlier year in 2013 where he shot 38%.
Well, there you go.
which he's not ever doing again. But the point is, he's not he might not be a 33% shooter, but that's not a huge part of the reason he's been good for the Cavs. So I think when you're looking at this team, a lot of the candidates for regression aren't really there, or negative regression. But then you look at the positive regression. Okay, they're going to add a healthy Tristan Thompson, who Brian Windhorst on this podcast said was nursing a knee injury as well.
Right.
You look at, you're going to integrate Isaiah Thomas, who finished fifth in MVP voting. Whether you like Thomas or not, it seems pretty clear that he's at the least helpful, and he's also not Derrick Rose.
Yeah. Yeah, Derrick Rose should not be in this rotation when Isaiah Thomas comes back and is playing healthy. Him coming back, obviously, I've expressed my concerns about how Isaiah Thomas is going to factor in against the Warriors when and if the Cavs get to the finals. But there's no denying that he's a great player. He is a really, really damn good player. And I think a big part of what he's going to do is get everyone settled into their roles. We're talking about whether or not what Jeff Green is doing is sustainable. He's in that condensed role, almost like what Derek Williams had, where it's, hey, run the floor, be athletic. This is a team that hasn't always had a lot of athletes. So when you have someone that's going to cut and finish on those cuts and those passes that LeBron and other playmakers create for you, that's really big. Games where Jeff Green has struggled is when the offense bogs down and they need someone to create, and all of a sudden Jeff Green's posting up from 18 feet. But when you have another creator like Isaiah Thomas, if anything, it might make things easier for Green and help him sustain this production. So I do think there are a lot of guys that are due for positive regression there.
Yeah, it's also worth noting Jay Crowder. I think he's, it's very clear to me that, so I've heard some people, I think Lowe said on his podcast with Beck about how Celtics people were saying, he wasn't the same player last year after an ankle injury or something two years ago. And it's I don't know, he's still pretty good last year. He's better than this.
Yeah.
So I think hopefully once he gets a little more solidified, you see the potential at least for positive regression. And then also, finally, you have J.R. Smith, who is currently shooting 31% from three.
Mm-hmm.
That should get better.
It has gone better. It was down at 12% through the first 10 games or whatever.
Yeah,
it was,
so that's normalizing quite a bit. And yeah. So you see a lot of positive trends. I think the real biggest negative trend that could hit this team is, as you said, putting Derrick Rose back in the rotation.
It's funny because Derrick Rose, as much as I hated it, and I haven't been shy about admitting that I'm not a big fan of Derrick Rose as a person. I just don't. It's not someone that I can identify with, and I don't get the appeal of him. But the fact that he has been just so damaging to the team when he's on the court, he looked okay in preseason, and you kind of had to acknowledge that. But the Cavs were also playing a lot of really bad teams in preseason, and you're going like 20 deep with a bunch of training camp signees and stuff like that. And he was the focal point of the offense. Like, there wasn't even LeBron there most games in preseason. So he looked good then, but he's just been a disaster. And I don't know how much of that, his inability to finish and really make decisions, is connected to his injury. Like, his field goal percentage hasn't been horrific, but he's just kind of submarined the team on both ends of the floor when he's out there. And just the lack of passing from him is startling, especially when he came into the season boasting how the league had turned him into a scorer and he was going to get back to his facilitating roots. He's by far having his most selfish season as a player. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, it's like, there's very few players who make it more clear that you can't just read a box score to see how a player played than Rose, because he has just been so damaging, as you've said. And I think that if the Wade backup point guard experiment wasn't going so swimmingly, you could make the case of like, okay, so he doesn't really, he's killing LeBron by dominating the ball in LeBron led lineups and he's not passing, so he doesn't work with LeBron. So maybe you could put him in there for like 15 minutes a game as like this offense, instant offense point guard off the bench. Like, I think that would be a archetype that, you know, I think we could all sell ourselves on.
Yeah.
It's like, no, they're good there. They neither want nor need Derrick Rose to do that off the bench with Wade playing the way he is.
Right. And that was kind of the role that most fans had sold themselves into. Even I sold myself into that. He could be productive in that role. But as he said, with Dwayne Wade playing so well, there really isn't a spot for him. And one thing that Derrick Rose has actually done this season has been giving me an appreciation for Iman Shumpert. Now, he is admittedly playing more controlled, and when he was playing point guard, even though he wasn't effective as a scorer, you didn't see him go iso Shump as often. He was controlled with his dribble. He wasn't really turning it over a ton. Like, it was surprising to see, but I mean, if Derrick Rose can help you appreciate what you had, I mean, doesn't that make the signing positive?
It does not. I mean, and also, like, the fact of the matter is, like, Shumpert at least provides a degree of versatility that if you're picking one of those two guys to be in the rotation, like, you can say, hey, Shump, we're going to play you with Wade, and you need to go guard the point guard, or you need to guard the bigger threat so Wade can chill. Okay, he can do that.
Right.
Or Shump, we need you to play nominal point guard while LeBron's out there, so LeBron can, and LeBron will be our point guard. That works too. Rose can only play like Derrick Rose. He can only do the thing. And it's like, that thing, if you're not that good at the thing anymore, then what's the point? And
that thing is going balls to the walls at all time.
Yeah. And like, it's just not working. And I don't know, man. Like, I think you can tell me if I'm like making this up, but I remember when we were talking like early in the year, like after the Wade signing, I kind of like had that like vague kind of, not really like a prediction, but like a thought of a possibility that Rose doesn't finish the season with the team. And I'm kind of leaning into that a little more recently.
I wouldn't be shocked if Derrick Rose doesn't play another game as a Cavalier.
Wow.
Like, I think it's likely that he will. But it would not shock me if he's done.
Well, I mean, it kind of just depends on when everyone gets back, right? But, like, this is not a player who's going to be okay in your locker room collecting DNP CDs.
Should we go conspiracy theory that the doctors are just keeping him out because he's bad? Telling him not to go?
Well, you know I love my conspiracy theories about the Cleveland Cavaliers medical staff. But no, I just think his ankles hurt, man, and, like, he's just not that good. I just think ultimately the smartest basketball decision is to take him out of the rotation. But unfortunately, in doing so, you are pretty much resigning yourself to having to cut him or have a profoundly unhappy dude in your locker room.
Yeah. I mean, the Knicks had it easy last year because Derrick Rose would just not show up to games. He didn't even have to come up with something. Though that would make life easier.
Yeah, maybe he'll do that. yeah, I don't know, man. I just don't really see this happening. Like, I just don't see it working. I think we both agree that Jeff Green and Rose were these flyers that, like, okay, if they don't work, it's for the minimum, so who cares? Like,
I mean, really, they took three flyers, yeah, and two of them have worked out. Like, yep. I think it's, I know Dwayne Wade's season-long numbers haven't been impressive, but it's funny. Like, I know he isn't the same player he has been in the past defensively, but compared to what the Cavs have had, having that length on the perimeter, like, he gets these loose balls and turnovers, and he gets his hands in passing lanes, and sure, he gets beat one-on-one often. But overall, like, I think he gives the Cavs something they haven't had, and part of the reason those closing lineups have been successful is what he can bring when he's actually engaged. Like, he's going to do the same LeBron thing of get beat one-on-one and save himself, and the ceiling of when he's trying certainly is nowhere near as high as LeBron, but I still think he can have a positive impact, and regardless of whether or not he's scoring, that length plus the playmaking he can bring is making him a positive factor on this team now that he's settled into his role and he's no longer kind of freewheeling when he's on the court, because he's becoming comfortable with what the Cavs are trying to run.
Yeah, I think you're right in talking about that wingspan, that length. I mean, he's only 6'4", but I think his wingspan's like 6'11" or something like that. He's got very long arms for a guard.
He's got rakes.
Maybe it's like 6'9". It's long. He's got long arms. And, I mean, that's part of why he's been such a prolific shot blocker and stealer in his career. And I just think that, like, even when he does get beat, he can kind of do the old Andre Kirilenko, like, let you by and then harass your shot on the back end. and I just think he's been a really solid player for them, and I don't need him to have 20-point scoring nights. Like, I don't even want that, really. And, like, I get a little uncomfortable when he takes that much of the offense. Like, I'm okay with him just playing point guard, doing what Jose Calderon pretends to do.
Hey, Jose is a legend. Jose's undefeated. I think there is an issue that, I mean, no matter what team he's on, even though he's an undrafted player, he's going to get his 14 starts a year. And I think there might be a curse of Calderon. We might need to investigate that.
Hey, Justin, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
If you're looking at the Cavs stats, can you delete the or hide the page?
Okay.
What do you think Jose Calderon's PER is this year?
Is it negative? Give me that.
Negative. It's not negative.
Is it even a full one?
It's 0.3.
That's amazing. Jose Calderon's PER looks exactly like his blood alcohol level when he's on the court. That's goals right there.
That's a good joke.
Thank you.
Yeah, dude, like, I'm still, like, I'd rather have Kay Felder.
I was looking the other day at unsigned guards, and we don't have to go into that, but I was like, how many of these guys would I take over, like, Calderon and Rose? At this point, I might even take, like, Jordan Crawford. Like, let's get some steezes in here and get, like, as weird as possible.
At least Jordan Crawford's hilarious.
Right, and I've actually really enjoyed this four-game streak because they have been so painfully Cavs, but at least these funny and infuriating nights are now ending in wins. Like, I don't know if you can really expect a whole lot because as much as LeBron and Love are playing well, this is still a team that has been absolutely gutted with injuries and didn't have a lot of continuity to begin with. So some struggles aren't exactly surprising. What is surprising to me, though, and I know this is actually probably one of the best examples of why we can't overanalyze and dissect these early season numbers, but the fact that the Cavs, with LeBron and Love individually playing so well offensively, they're better with both of them on the bench when you're looking at those net ratings. And it's hilarious to me. Like, LeBron,
hey, can you do me a favor and just run those numbers without Rose? just to, for my peace of mind.
I'm not going to do that because I know when I'm listening to podcasts, my favorite thing is when you hear a keyboard typing for like a minute or two, but I'm going to deprive our listeners of that because I'm an asshole like that.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like,
let's get weird, man.
Weird season, ultimately. Like, LeBron has his first negative net rating, like, since his rookie year.
And he's doing that while averaging, like, 29, 9, and 8 on, like, 58.5% shooting from the floor, 40% from three, and a career best free throw percentage of 78% from the free throw line. Like, he's been absurd. And yet, Derrick Rose has that power to bring that lineup down.
The free throw shooting is fascinating, and so is the three-point shooting. I don't remember LeBron. I remember that one year in Miami when he shot 40% from three. His jumper was, like, so pure. I don't think it's ever been this pure in a Cavaliers uniform. Is that fair to say?
No, absolutely. And the form is looking good. I mean, he took big strides last season. I remember he was taking a lot of jumpers even early on. And even though he wasn't hitting all of them, it's like, no, I worked on this summer. I'm going to hit these shots. And as the season progressed, he was just shooting the lights out. And that's really carried forward. And it's just incredible to me, like, how well he is playing when he doesn't have another guy that can initiate the offense and create shots and make things easier for him. Like, it's just absolutely remarkable because Derrick Rose sure shit wasn't doing anything. And yet LeBron is still getting that 58.5% from the field. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's really enjoying playing with Dwayne Wade again for that reason. Is Wade, like, at the least has a very strong understanding of LeBron and he knows where LeBron's going to cut. Like, I forget what play it was against the Clippers, so I'm going to freelance a little bit, but I think it was LeBron kind of got into the lane and got stonewalled and just fired this unbelievably hot pass at Wade 2 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was, like, way too hard of a pass, like, for anyone to catch it, but Wade caught it right away. And I think it was entirely based on, like, this, like, just synergy. It's like, okay, I know this might be coming, so I'm going to be really ready for it.
Have you ever played with someone like that, like, in men's league or high school basketball that just passes way too hard all the time?
Yeah, I've played with some people that are like that. And it's really annoying.
I still remember, I think it was when I was in the 11th grade, there was this one guy that I ended up backing up. He had came back midway through the season with from an ACL tear. So I had started in his place and he came back, but he was one of the best players in the province and he just had a crazy arm on him, but he would throw passes way too hard all the time to the point where it was just comical. Like, everyone knew it, but he threw a pass from about half court and someone was cutting baseline, but wasn't expecting it. And he caught him in the head, like in the side of the head, and took him clean off his feet. It was one of the most hilarious things I've seen, that a pass could take someone clean off their feet, and the guy just slides on the floor.
Yeah, worth noting, LeBron's true shooting percentage goes up by just under 5% with Wade on the floor this season. Versus
that doesn't surprise me.
And I think having someone to assist and, like, consider that, like, normally the greatest influencers of LeBron's shooting percentages are shooters. Like, last year, I ran some numbers mid-season. Like, his percentages just shot up whenever Channing Frye was on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So to have him paired with Wade, who, like, obviously we all know cannot shoot, and have his numbers go up like that just is a testament to their chemistry and his understanding that he's going to get the ball where he wants it with Wade on the floor.
Hey, Chase Down listeners, listen up. The Cavaliers may not care about the regular season, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys. On Draft, you play in real-life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you, so you won't be screwed if Derrick Rose gets scratched at the very last minute. Though, if you're rostering Rose, you probably don't deserve to win in the first place. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part? You can play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start at just $1, so you don't have to be Dan Gilbert if you want to buy your way in. There's no salary caps, and you can play in a real live snake draft, just like the one you play in with your friends in a season-long league. Come and join me on Draft today. Download the app at any time. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or you can play right from your computer on draft.com. Whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But if you want that, you're going to have to use our promo code, THECHASEDOWN. That's THECHASEDOWN, one word. That's right, you can play a real money game for free just for using our promo code, THECHASEDOWN, one word, on your first deposit on Draft.
Two guys I think we need to discuss that, as we're talking about Cavs that have played well, like, just fucking pros. Like, there's no other way to say it. Kyle Korver and Channing Frye. Like, Channing Frye was completely out of the rotation, and then when called upon, has come out and played hard, played well, was ready. Like, there's not enough good things you can say about him, and whether it be from the Road Tripping podcast where you hear him interact with players, or just how they talk about him, or the Snapchats and the videos that they show, like, you can just tell that he's a guy that's always present, always engaged, and clearly always ready as well. And Kyle Korver, like, my God, that guy can shoot. Like, his stats, like, even if you look over his career, it's absurd, but his true shooting percentage this year is 69.1%, and that wouldn't even be the best mark of his career.
That's bonkers. That's nuts. I mean, the thing with Korver that's so funny is, first off, can I just take like a moment to dunk on everyone who thought that him making $7 million a year was too much?
Dunk on them, man.
How insanely, like, and like, these were smart people, like, just like get overreacting to the Cavs, like, rough off season, but like, I can't believe you're paying someone that old that much money, like, when the third year was almost entirely unguaranteed.
And how many years until people figure out this new, like, cap and what players are going to make?
Yeah, it's absurd. Like, this dude can help you win almost any game. Like, he's so good. And like, for him to be making $7 million, like, sure, he's not a good defender anymore, but there are a billion specialists that get more than that all the time.
It was hilarious.
Locker room, and like, I don't know, man. I just cannot believe anyone had anything other than like a positive reaction to that deal, especially when we found out the third year was unguaranteed. I would have gotten it, like, if you were like a little concerned about that, but it's like, no, they just made it a really good trade chip for the third year when he inevitably just wants to retire.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you, like, let's say worst case scenario, the team has to blow it up next summer. That's pretty easy to flip one guaranteed year of Kyle Korver. Like, that's not going to be the end of the world.
Not hard at all. And he's obviously still good this year. So unless you were really worried he was going to stop being an NBA player all of a sudden, which I guess a couple people were after one bad game against the Celtics.
He's competing on defense too. Like, it's almost sad because it's like, oh, you're the only one trying on defense right now. And like, he's still in space. He's hilariously like outmatched. Like, he's going to get burned by almost anyone in those situations, but he plays good team defense. He fights through screens. He's in position and he's got decent hands. So he does get a few deflections. But it's just so sad that the 36-year-old is one of the only guys that's trying on defense consistently.
I think if I could make up a stat right now, Kyle Korver definitely leads the league in when the other team is about to get an offensive rebound because they just outjumped Kevin Love and he was out of position to box out, of him just poking the ball out to like JR. Like, like he just kind of comes from behind and just pokes it out as they're grabbing the offensive board and it just pops over to one of his teammates. That's Kyle Korver, like 12 possessions a game.
I feel like that's a fairly safe bet. Like, not only did that 3-point barrage against the Knicks like save that game in the fourth quarter, but like in the first half, he was going all out defensively and actually making a difference. It was hilarious to watch.
I like to watch Korver guard. Actually, this is just in general. Like, I like to watch when shooters guard each other, like truly good shooters.
Because in
that Knicks game, he and McDermott were shadowing each other and just dead sprinting around the court trying to get the other one. And it was just like really fun because like both of them like knew all the little tricks.
Okay. McDermott is also like a bottom two defender in the league.
Oh yeah. But like it was just like fun like watching, like he's not a good defender, but like they just like knew what the other one was trying to do. Whether they could stop it or not was a different like factor, but like they were both just like mirroring each other in a really fun way, and like I like to watch it when Redick does it too.
It's pretty clear like that he deserves.
It was always really fun.
Yeah, it's pretty clear he deserves consistent minutes though, because I think I brought this up on a previous podcast. If so, just yell at me. But he, like J.R. Smith, has gravity. Jay Crowder doesn't necessarily have gravity, but he's someone that can hit open shots. But Korver like really makes the defense work because he's not spotting up and pulling a defender out of the paint. He's constantly running through screens. He's causing the defense to kind of shift and move around, similar to how someone that has the ball and is driving into the paint would do, because you have to factor him for him at all times, and it can get the attention of 2-3 people as he's going through those screens. He really, really impacts the defense with his movement in a way you don't see it as much in today's NBA. Like, you remember it from like guys like Ray Allen and Rip Hamilton. But I mean, outside of like Klay Thompson, like there's not a lot of guys that get their buckets exclusively in that way in today's NBA.
I think that, you know, I think we've both been frustrated at times with Ty Lue's coaching job. Like, we've not been like as thrilled as we'd like to be. But one thing he has done a nice job this year is building in those kind of split cuts for Korver, where, you know, Korver is getting, first off, Korver draws 3 fouls a game. Like, he gets teams in the bonus just by them like desperately like pulling back on his hip.
Right.
And a lot of times he'll generate an open layup for like Jeff Green if Jeff Green's setting an off-ball screen for him, where Green can just slip it because they're so worried about Korver. Like, he generates outside of his own, like, you know, 9 to 10 points a game. I think he generates a solid 6 to 8 just via movement for the Cavs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the sets that Tyronn Lue has run successfully in his time with the Cavs, it's not. Like, it's different than what, like, let's say Brad Stevens in Boston would run, where they've got these play designs where they can get anybody a bucket, and that, like, it just generates these looks off cuts and stuff like that, and it's beautiful movement, it's fun basketball to watch. What Tyronn Lue runs really well is plays that highlight what an individual player does extremely well offensively, and kind of puts the defense in a compromising position. Like, when they would use Kyrie as the screener with LeBron as the ball handler, it would put a point guard on, or it would put their small forward on Kyrie, which gives them an advantage there. It puts LeBron on a point guard, and that's where they get an advantage. Korver, as you said, they use him in a good way where it's really compromising the defense, and you're drawing fouls, and the threat of Korver is used really, really well with the team. At least now they're using it well, not necessarily well at the start of the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And Korver's been great. I think Fry has just been, like, Fry is this dude who, like, I know a lot of people were really frustrated with him last season. But, I mean, this is a dude who went through a lot of stuff last year.
Yeah,
like a lot of stuff, and you know, I think it affected his play. And like, I mean, to some extent, like, you do have to wonder if there is something going on with Jay Crowder as well.
I was going to mention that.
with the death of it. Was it his father or his mother?
His mother passed away basically like an hour after the trade call.
So, I mean, you know, we do underrate where these guys' mental spaces are and how important they are.
Yeah, we forget they're human every now and then. It is in 2K.
So basically every second Channing Frye has played for the Cavaliers and has not been directly grieving, you know, the loss of loved ones, he's been really good. And I'm kind of glad he's worked his way back into the rotation. And I do kind of wonder if that and this is something I've been thinking about for a minute. So they've gone back to the Crowder Love front court.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing well right now, or better than they have been. When Thompson comes back, are they going to go back to the Thompson Love front court?
I'm really not too sure. I think it's going to be dependent on how Crowder plays leading up to that. Like, if Jay Crowder is still struggling, I wouldn't be surprised if he does move to the bench and they go back to that lineup, because that has worked in the past. Like, theoretically, there's no reason why Isaiah Thomas, J.R. Smith, LeBron, Love, and Thompson shouldn't work nearly as well as the lineups they had in the past with Kyrie there. Based on what they'll be asking from Thomas, those should be successful. And I think having Tristan Thompson is actually going to be a blessing for Thomas, because he hasn't really had a pick and roll threat like that in a while. And Kevin Love can get him shots similar to how Al Horford did. I think that's a lineup that works really well, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them go to it. But if this lineup starts to figure it out, if Jay Crowder starts hitting his shots, playing consistently on defense, they allow less penetration, because that was kind of the gamble, right? That if you have LeBron and Crowder as your forwards, they're going to limit the amount of penetration and the number of attempts at the rim that Kevin Love would have to contest, because he's obviously not a shot blocker or someone that's going to make a difference in that aspect. But if that's not happening and this team just shows no growth on the defensive end at all, I think you have to go back to Thompson in those lineups.
I mean, I'm fine with that too, because I also think it allows the Cavs to get a little more creative with how they use their bench.
Right.
Crowder can kind of play that 2, 3, and 4 as needed. And then that's a good way to, you know, kind of, you know, make sure you get Frye in the rotation still. It's really hard to get Frye minutes when you're playing Love at the 5 and Tristan is at the backup 5.
Right. No, I completely agree there. It's just impossible.
It's a lot easier. It's not, you know, impossible, but it is easier if you're going at the Love-Tristan starting combo. And I do think that's ultimately probably their defensive ceiling, is to start Love and Tristan. And, like, I just worry about Love. Like, I've been writing all the previews for Fear the Sword for their last 3 games, and like just every day.
Way to brag.
That's
you're a workhorse, Carter. We appreciate you.
Shut up. point is, 3 games ago, it's Dwight Howard. Okay, Love's gonna have to fight Dwight Howard for 40 minutes, and then it's like, okay, he's got to fight DeAndre Jordan for 40 minutes, and then Monday night, it's like. Like, this dude's going to wear down over time, I think.
Yeah, and that was a big part of why the Knicks kind of got out there. Like, Porzingis just absolutely eviscerated him. And that was a matchup in the past, at least historically, when you look how Thompson had played against Porzingis. Porzingis had always struggled in that matchup, and Tristan had done a good job. And, it seems like there's more and more big centers that are talented, strong, skilled. Like, as much as we talk about the small ball, the league seems to be getting bigger and bigger. And I'm with you, especially with the back issues Kevin Love has had in the past. It's concerning. I wouldn't want to put more stress on his back than is necessary.
I think it just makes sense to me. It made sense to me originally. And then, okay, I was like, okay, I see why you would want to do this. But I think with the way Crowder's playing, it just kind of makes sense to put Thompson back in that starting lineup, provided he's fully healthy and back to kind of playing like Tristan Thompson that we know and love. But yeah, I just think this team is trending up, and I think ultimately they're going to have a lot of opportunities to prove that they're, you know, that they're not past their prime, or that these three finals runs haven't wiped them out. Because until they do set that baseline that Zach Lowe talked about in his pod, there is going to be a degree of concern.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. Like, my biggest concern, like, I know people get on Tristan Thompson. He's an easy guy to kind of single out with the Cavs, but they need him to play like he did last season in the regular season and through part of the playoffs. He did have that knee tendonitis that ended up being an issue, but he really added rim protection to his arsenal last season, especially the first two-thirds of the year. He was just fantastic on the defensive end. And if he's not performing in that role, they just have nobody else that can do it. This might actually be a good segue. I'm going to throw out the trade theory. We talked a little bit about it off air. But with Mike Conley hurting his Achilles and Memphis currently being under 500, do you think at all there would be any possibility of Marc Gasol hitting the trade market? Like, to me, I would give up a lot for Marc Gasol. Like, I think that would be a big-time game-changer here. I would even throw in the most I would give up would be Thompson, Shumpert, and the Brooklyn pick for Gasol in return. Obviously, you try to get him for less, or you try to get something else thrown in by Memphis. But I think that would be a worthwhile deal, even at his age of 32.
And he's turning 33 this season.
Yeah, so same age as LeBron.
It's a tough sell, I think, in a lot of ways, because this is, like, if it doesn't work, then you're just screwed long term. But it's not like he's not a movable piece. I skew short term. Like, I don't really care that much about 6 years from now for the Cavs. Like, we'll figure it out later.
Right.
Because I just think you have to maximize the LeBron window as long as you can, and ideally keep him there. But I do worry about having, even though Gasol is a defensive savant, like, he's not super fleet of foot at this point in his career, and neither is Kevin Love. And that is kind of a slow footed front court, even if, you know, a LeBron Love front Gasol front court has enough defensive savvy, and LeBron does cover a lot of warts. I don't know. I think the fit's really interesting. I don't know if a center is what, like, puts you over the edge against the Warriors.
See, to me, the big thing is Memphis has always played Golden State really close and really well. They've either blown out Golden State or hung around until the end in a lot of their games. And I think a big part of that is they do play the slow-it-down style. Gasol is not only a great defensive player and can anchor a team defensively, but he also stretches it out. Like, he's a three-point shooter. He's a great passer. And I just think that's the way you beat Golden State, is that slow-it-down style. And, I mean, they hung around and they played them tight with Gasol and Zach Randolph. And I think Kevin Love at this point is a better defensive player than Zach Randolph, certainly taller. I think it makes it tough for Golden State to go too small against him. I think it makes a conundrum for who Draymond Green is going to cover. Maybe he's not able to stick Love all the time, and then all of a sudden that opens up Kevin Love as an offensive option against the Warriors. And if you are getting burned, you can go with Gasol with LeBron and Crowder as your front court and really combat Golden State that way. So I think when you talk about a lineup that can, when you play that slow it down style and really bringing the ball up slowly, making those possessions count, beating them up on the boards with Love and Gasol, I just think it dramatically increases the Cavs' chances. Like, right now, I know Golden State isn't playing their best basketball, but I still think they're a better team than last season, and last year's team was probably arguably the greatest team ever put together. So I think the chances are a little bit slim right now. And this is the type of thing that makes a difference this year. It might help you keep LeBron as well. And he's got 3 years left on a deal, a game that isn't necessarily predicated on athleticism. I just think it's a good fit.
Yeah. Here's a question. And I don't like to, like, I'm not opposed to the idea as much as I'm just interested in it.
No, for sure. I mean, that's the most important. That's the most interesting part of trades is the theoretical. That's people love the hypothetical.
Here's my question. So we know Kevin Love is a really gifted passer, and that's never manifested in Cleveland. I think that's fair to say.
You're wondering if that would be used with Gasol.
100%. It's like,
does it need Gasol to be?
I think it does, to make it really worth it. Like, part of the reason, like, him being able to drop those nice passes down from the elbow and facilitate and, like, kind of play that two-man game with Conley, like, that's all really important. And it's like, if the Cavs are going to use him as a straight-up post-up big man or a pick-and-pop guy, that's not enough.
I think that's a really valid point. And as much as I've been a Tyronn Lue defender, I think if something like this would manifest itself and they don't use him properly, I think then you have to reevaluate where if the players are still connecting with Lue and that's working out, then maybe you keep him, but you take the responsibilities offensively out of his hands and bring in an offensive coordinator and an assistant coach that handles that. I know often we assign all of the responsibility for the coaching in the NBA to the head coach, but that simply isn't the case. Look with the Warriors, how Mike Brown and Steve Kerr are opposites in some ways, and they complement each other. Maybe that's what you do with Tyronn Lue. But I would have serious concerns if that trade happened, which is, let's be clear, is a huge long shot. Memphis may even say no to an offer like that. That guy is the franchise. He means so much to that community. And they're still a pretty damn good team. And we don't know how long Mike Conley is going to be out for. But I think it would be worthwhile to at least explore it. I think that's my main point. But if the trade did happen and he isn't used properly, I think that's when you have to kind of evaluate why you can have Isaiah Thomas, LeBron, Love, and Gasol and not make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely could do I think they could definitely do well with it, but it is not a no-doubter fit. And, I mean, I would be interested. I think it'd be really fun. And like, I always like an interesting, fun to watch team. And I think Gasol would certainly help with that, but I don't think it would be a no brainer. And I think maybe the Cavs are waiting to save that Brooklyn pick for a no brainer.
Yeah. I just don't think there's a lot of situations where that player becomes available.
Nope.
But you never know. I mean, the NBA is so weird and so many unexpected things happen.
Also depends what that Nets pick is looking like. They keep competing with teams like assholes.
Or if the one and done rule gets pulled out and all of a sudden high school players are allowed to go in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool. That would increase the margin for error for sure. But before we move on from the subject of the Nets, I think we got to go over their schedule for this week. They almost came back. They came back against the Warriors, which was absolutely horrifying. They had a big third quarter there, which would have just been absolutely trolltastic from the Warriors if they blew that game against the Nets. Mm-hmm. That would have drove me nuts.
Yep.
Are the Cavs blowing it Wednesday against the Nets? Because you called it last time. I want to know, are they blowing it in Cleveland on Wednesday?
No, the Cavs are going to come out there. They're going to actually give a shit. They got embarrassed last time, and no one's more dangerous than an embarrassed Cavs team because they actually might try. Nets are without D'Angelo Russell, who's obviously really important for them, even though they were without him in their win against the Cavs. I will say, even though I think the Cavs are going to win this game, if they're more than 4-1 underdogs, you can bet your ass I'm going to bet on the Nets.
Oh, you're a gambling man. I love it. Then, I mean, the Nets are now third last in the East, which is obviously positive. They got a lot of road games coming up. Like, they're in Cleveland, then they host Portland on Friday, and then it's Memphis, Houston, and Dallas. Which obviously Memphis is banged up and Dallas is just, well, let's call it what it is, dog shit. I still see a lot of losses for them, and I think they're a team that's been riding high and has been playing well. Obviously, they seem the coaching there has been fantastic because they've been without two of their best players now for a noteworthy amount of games. Like D'Angelo Russell's been out, Jeremy Lin went down in the first game, and when you're missing two guys that were responsible for initiating your offense and you're still this good offensively, I think you have to credit the coaching. But I think if they get a few losses in a row, if those really string together, I think things could fall apart in a hurry for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the standings right now, you've got the Mavs are clearly worse, the Hawks are clearly worse, the Bulls are clearly worse. Then it gets a little messy. The Kings are 4-12. And they've been pretty awful, but they're probably in the same tier. The Clippers are the fifth worst team in the league right now on an 8-game losing streak. Give us Pat Bev for free, please.
Oh, my God. Now, that's a guy I would... Obviously, you're not giving up the Brooklyn pick for him, but yeah, if there was any way to make that happen, I'd be all over that.
And then it's the Nets. So, I mean, I think right now the Lakers are tied with the Nets. The Lakers are up. They just moved ahead of them with their win against the Nuggets. So the Nets will likely be settled in as the fifth worst team in the league over the course of the stretch as their schedule gets tougher. But, I mean, teams are going to have to take it from them. They're not giving it this year at all. They're not giving it away.
Right. Which is annoying. I'm already sick of watching Nets games and watching their box scores.
It is quite the burden. It is quite the burden.
Speaking of annoying... The Boston Celtics and their fans, both the ones that cover their team and the ones that sit in the stands, my God, they take winning well, eh? They don't overreact at all. They understand that it's early in the season and that this team, I mean, their floor is probably 80 wins, right?
Yeah, I mean, minimum. yeah, I mean, no cheering in the press box, huh, guys?
No cheering in the press box. Man, there's a lot of heat checks. There are a lot of heat check articles already, which I know that's a favorite pastime of you is collecting some of the best articles that that Celtics Twitter can put together.
Listen, Justin, did you know that the Celtics might be for real?
Ooh, I've never heard that one before.
Oh, yeah, it's dumb. I imagine they'll stop having the best defensive rebounding rate in the league. just a thought. I mean, maybe they'll be that good forever. I don't foresee that being the case. But, you know, what the hell do I know?
Don't slander Al Horford as a rebounder or his sister will come after you.
She sure will.
I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy to see Kyrie do well. I want to see them fail in the playoffs, and I'm fairly confident that this is my hot take. This is my hot November take, seeing as everyone seems to like to get those takes out. Sure. I don't think the Cavs are going to play Boston in the playoffs. I think...
You son of a bitch.
I think that when you talk about teams that are built for the playoffs, I'm trusting Milwaukee, Washington, and even Toronto over Boston this year. So unless we get matched up with them in the second round, I don't think that this Boston team is making the conference finals. They are due for regression. I don't trust Jaylen Brown being this good as a shooter from three. I think Jason Tatum's a nice player, but maybe he's due for some regression. They're going to go through some slumps, and when this team comes back down to earth, I think there are some very real flaws that have been masked by a lot of very large comebacks early this season.
I agree.
All right. Well, on that happy note, we're going to wrap things up. Appreciate all the feedback from our listeners. Remember, you can support the show by rate, reviewing, and subscribing, as well as supporting our sponsors. We're very, very thrilled with draft. I won tonight. Even though I picked John Wall with my last pick, and he didn't end up playing, and I got a zero, I still came away with the win because I had Curry and Kuzma came through in the clutch in a one-on-one matchup. So that's my cool story, because everyone loves listening to other people talk about their fantasy teams. But make sure that you are checking us on Draft. Remember,
Draft.com.
And with your first deposit, you can get a free play when you use the promo code THECHASEDOWN. So make sure you're doing that. Tell your friends, steal their phones, sign them up, use their promo code. And while you have their phone in your hand, rate, review, and subscribe. It's the best way to support us. So for Carter and myself, we appreciate you listening. And as always, go Cavs.